This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's coming Sunday, daylight savings time, spring ahead. Everybody up an hour earlier, no matter what the clocks say. But the fact is, Americans are way ahead of the clock this year, getting up and at 'em earlier and earlier in the pre-dawn morning. A 24/7 global economy, more competition, longer commutes, and a desperate search for time has alarm clocks ringing at sunrise and long before all over the country. Trains running earlier, stores opening earlier, lives gearing up before the sun. It may be the biggest dawn patrol since the typical American was still feeding chickens and milking cows. Up next on Point, up early. The 24/7 American life moving to the crack of dawn. Joining me first from New York is Wall Street Journal reporter John Jurgensen. His recent article on the new wake-up call turned our attention to the increase in early risers. John, thanks for being with us.
Hi there.
What are the signs? What did you find?
Well, we found a lot of things when we took a look at this. We first started looking into it, not necessarily because we noticed it in our own lives, because like most newsrooms, ours gets going later in the morning and shuts down later in the evening. But we did notice things happening on TV, especially as morning news broadcasts started their morning shows a little bit earlier, say 6 o'clock in the morning instead of 7 o'clock in the morning. So we just started poking around there, and lo and behold, we started finding lots of signs that this is happening in many people's lives.
Start unraveling that ball of string for us. I was fascinated with the evidence that you found.
Well, we started with the very the ones that you would assume that you'd find there, everything from gym attendance, which I think many people associate with a morning activity because they just don't have time or the energy to do it later in the night. So we started with those obvious things and then worked our way down into other pursuits that people would be getting into in the early morning just because they don't have the time or the energy in the late afternoon or evenings in their lives. And, you know, found some surprising things there, everything from, you know, parachuting first thing in the morning before work to get a little bit of an adrenaline burst, to online shopping when some of these deals are really showing up. Also things like spending time with the kids, family time, personal time that, you know, you just really wouldn't be able to fit in anywhere else. It's in one of those situations where, as everyone knows, you can't create more time out of thin air, so you have to create it somewhere else, and most people do that by sacrificing sleep.
Now, it's not easy to pin this down, but we see all kinds of markers around. I see here a story recently in New York. The trains are running earlier because there's just a climbing demand from people to get into the office earlier. They're responding to that. You found some really interesting indicators in water and power use.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the way things happen when you're doing or looking into a story like this. You know, it's not as if there's a government agency that's monitoring the nation's alarm clocks, although there is some interesting stuff that comes out of census data and other indicators. But we did look at indicators that are similar to the ones you just mentioned there, being the transportation, commuting time starting earlier for a lot of people. That was, the 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock hour really showed the biggest increase there. But as you mentioned, we also saw these other examples happening. Power usage going up in some places. You see that morning spike starting to happen a little bit earlier than it used to in some markets. Not everywhere, of course. There were some that I talked to that, you know, weren't really monitoring it that closely. But some markets, big ones in the Mid-Atlantic region, for example, they're seeing, you know, a bigger increase at the 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock hour.
So the power company feeling the surge very early there, and water use from all that showering and flushing and doing the laundry that early. You're seeing water companies, you say, booster pumps now kicking in at 5:30 a.m. in Philadelphia instead of 6 or later when they traditionally did. I mean, that means people are up and at it. They're living.
Right. Yeah, these are the things you do first thing in the morning. You jump in the shower, you try and squeeze in a load of laundry, and someone's got to keep the water pressure up to meet that demand, and that's what they're doing, at least in Philadelphia. This big company I talked to down there, Aqua America, said they've really noticed that, and they've had to make adjustments to their operations to accommodate that shift. So those booster pumps come on about half an hour earlier. And you know, it's not a big jump, and it's been happening to something over time. It's a slow shift from, you know, 6 to 5:30, 5, and some people wonder if we're, you know, going to push it all the way into the pre-pre-dawn hours.
And may well, and in some regions are. We're reading recently about real estate realtors open all night, showing condos in the middle of the night. Let's invite our listeners in. Elizabeth is calling from Belmont, Massachusetts. Hi, Elizabeth. What do you know?
Well, I had sleep problems for years. I would stay up late working, and then I'd go to sleep, and I'd toss and turn. And I started falling asleep when I put my kids to sleep, and now I sleep through the night. If I'm in by 9:30, I sleep till 4:30 or 5, and I get up totally refreshed. It's absolutely changed my life.
But that means you're up at the crack of dawn, so you're part of this demand on the power supply. You're the one showering and flushing and living early.
And doing the wash and getting on email and, you know, calling people that I don't really want to talk to, but I can leave a message because I know they're not at work at 5 a.m.
Are you actually finding family time then, Elizabeth, or is it you alone?
It makes everything easier for everyone in the family because I'm not cranky, which when I'm sleep deprived, I can't function at all. And it's making it so that I settle down with my kids at night, and it gets a little bit more of a routine in rather than trying to get them to bed and then manically doing everything afterwards.
So here it goes, early to bed, early to rise, and you love it. It's working for you. Elizabeth, thanks for your call. John Jurgensen, what I read you finding is that a lot of people are not necessarily turning in any earlier at the in the evening. They're just stretching it, burning both ends.
Right, yeah, they're pushing it wherever they can get it. I had one sleep expert say an interesting thing to me that, you know, we're switching from a 9-to-5 society to a 5-to-9 society. So, you know, as work demands push us, you know, and stretches ever thinner on both ends.
As in 5 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Exactly.
Oh, my
right.
gosh.
That was an interesting observation, I thought. And, you know, if you really think about it, I mean, of course not everyone lives the same way, but lots of us are feeling these demands. And when you add to the mix family and other obligations, if you want to keep up with social life at all those things usually get done in the evenings. So whenever you want to carve out that personal time, that alone time, for a lot of people, it's first thing in the morning. I did speak to a lot of people who are using that first, those first hours for, you know, very personal things like prayer or meditation or exercise, which could be a form of prayer or meditation for some people.
but not for just head on the pillow. John, let me get a call from Seattle, Washington here. Marie's calling. Hi, Marie, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I get up at 3:30 in the morning, and for me, it's definitely my personal time. I have two young kids. They get up about 6, and I spend those 2.5 hours doing all my chores, all my cleaning, sometimes gardening in the summer when it's light out as early as 4:30 and 5, and I love it. But I do go to bed early. I go to bed at 8 as soon as my kids go to sleep. So I try to get enough sleep, but I love getting up early.
But 3:30 a.m., that is really pushing it, Marie. I mean, pretty soon you're not even sleeping. You're just awake all the time at that rate.
Sometimes that's true, but I work a full day. I have an hour and a half commute each direction, and so it's really my only time to myself.
Do you feel, is this where you're finding that the kind of personal time John Jurgensen pointed out, is this the new sort of undiscovered continent for Americans, for you today, where you can have it your way, at your pace, the privacy, and, you know, sort of set your own agenda?
Yeah, I believe so. And if that's as long as you can do it. I mean, some of us have a real difficulty, no matter how much we'd love to, you know, have an extra few hours of life in the morning. A lot of people have a big struggle to do that, and they're, of course, lots of devices and services that are being put on the market to help people do that, extravagant and intricate alarm clocks that help you do that.
Right.
But, you know, I think that is sort of, the fully desired time to be working and alive.
Marie, in Seattle, what about the rest of your day when you're up at 3:30 a.m.? Are you dopey and dozing off, after lunch?
You know, not so much. I've gotten pretty used to it. And plus, you know, I live in Seattle. We have a lot of coffee around here, and coffee's my friend. So I drink a lot, and it works out.
And gardening as the sun comes up, that sounds pretty wild.
It is wild, but, you know, it's a great time. It's quiet out. I have time, and I can go out there and putter around, and I don't have to worry about the kids. And I don't know. It always works.
We hear it. Grabbing our time where we can find it. Marie in Seattle, thanks very much. For calling. John Jurgensen, take us on across that range. So there's the sort of private time, the meditation or exercise or prayer, but you've also got people here heading straight to the office. I mean, really feeling the kind of global economy knocking very early on their door.
Right. I mean, I think that is really the kind of hidden engine here that's pushing all this into happening. I mean, you have technology on one hand that allows us to be connected to our colleagues, to our business partners across the globe at any time of the day or night. So for many people who are in a global business, the reality might be 11 o'clock conference calls to India or, you know, first thing in the morning calls to Europe. So there's just not as much of a delineation between our private lives and our work lives, and technology is speeding that, of course. And as the caller from Seattle mentioned, the commute is really another big force here, and many regions of the country, or the reality is an hour long commute either way, and people just there's not any way to get there without spending that hour. So if you start earlier. One demographic person I was talking to, an expert in this, was mentioning also how immigration and demographics in the country are changing things, with many Hispanic workers jumping in the cars earlier and earlier to get to their morning jobs at 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning. That is also playing a factor. So there's lots of different pieces in motion here.
I guess if the masters of the universe are on the horn to India and Hong Kong, then all the rest of us line up to provide the services and make the world work in part around that global economy piece. And right now we're joined from Santa Monica, California, by Peter Weibrow. He's director of the Semmel Institute for Neuroscience and Human Behavior at UCLA, author of the book American Mania, When More Is Not Enough. Peter Weibrow, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Here we are. Alarm clock's going off earlier and earlier. All kinds of reasons for it. What do you see behind it?
Well, I think we've just, in a nutshell, we've traded time for money. You know, what we're doing is basically trying to find enough time to make the market work in the globalization, as we were talking about there. And if you're looking for time, the best place to go is to the sleep bank. And we have just begun to take out as much as we possibly can. It's fascinating. When the average American now sleeps 2 hours less during the week than they probably need. So we have extraordinary overdrafts occurring in our sleep time. The other interesting thing from your discussion earlier, and also from the call-in, is that we've learned how to shift our circadian rhythms, I think. You know, the fact is that we all have a natural rhythm that's tied to an ancient clock in the brain that's related to the way in which the night dark cycle occurs, and that is fixed essentially as we come towards the spring forward of the sleep in the next couple of days. We'll have to accommodate to that. And it's interesting that your callers, Marie, for example, and Elizabeth, what they've done is they've shifted everything forward. So they get up early, but they go to bed early. So they're still getting their 8 hours of sleep a night. Because if you don't do that, the sleep pressure gets to the point where you will, in fact, be obtunded during the day. You won't be as efficient.
So they're lucky enough to do that, but a lot of people do not. When Americans change their habits, a lot of businesses pay attention, broadcasters too. We're joined right now from New York by Jonathan Klein. He's president of CNN. Last November, the CNN morning show, American Morning, shifted its start an hour earlier from 7 a.m. to 6 a.m. I'm sure that was not for no reason. Jonathan Klein, thanks for being with us. Why did you do it?
Well, there are an awful lot of people awake earlier than ever, about twice as many people in the viewing audience today as there were 10 years ago. And just makes a lot of sense to try and broadcast.
Now, how do you know that's true? You guys must do a lot of marketing research to figure out who's out there and who's listening. Did you know before you shifted, or did it show up as soon as you turned the show on an hour earlier?
No, we shifted because we knew. We had seen the data, and we tracked something called PUTs, which is people using television. What percentage of the available universe of potential viewers is actually watching TV at a given time? And as you track the numbers of viewers available in the morning, there's been a marked increase over the last 10 years, and that's especially accelerated after 9/11. And our presumption is there are more people who are more aware that anything might be happening, especially while they're asleep. And when they wake up, they really want going on.
So they're not only up, but they want the news. They want to know what's happening. Jonathan Klein, do you track, in addition to the numbers, you say they've grown a lot, do you track the psychographic? I mean, what kind of people do you think it is who's up there? What kind of news are they interested in? Is this the gung-ho businessman who wants to know what's up with the markets in Hong Kong? Or is this the gardener who wants tips on, crocus blossoms?
You get a lot of all of it. You have a general appetite to know what's going on right now. It's less the news you can use and more the what's the situation today as I plan my day, whether you're a business person going off to work, whether you're just trying to get your kids to school and you want to know the weather. There's just a heightened interest in getting started, getting going, and being prepared.
So you've moved the start from 7 to 6. How low can this go? Do you think that's it? Are you going to, in another year, be, you know, popping the big show at 5 a.m.? Do your numbers tell you anything on the marketing side?
It's certainly possible. Then it becomes a cost-benefit analysis. Are there enough additional viewers at 5 a.m. to make it worth our while? But certainly we're open to the concept, and we're going to keep our eye on where the audience numbers are and you know, what the impact has been of coming on at 6 a.m., and we'll remain open to it.
Of course, there's another kind of cost here. I mean, your people on the air and those who help put them on the air all have to be up then, too. We all get ourselves into kind of self-perpetuating early direction here. How does your staff like coming in at God knows what hour to launch the show?
They hate it. I mean, you know, look, they're waking up anyway in the middle of the night. It's the hardest thing to do. I used to work an overnight shift, and, you know, to have your alarm go off and it's pitch black outside and no one else is around is kind of depressing. So I get where they're coming from, but I sort of figure, look, they're awake anyway at a lousy hour. What's an additional hour going to do to them? But it does. It adds up. It's a tough slog.
But with the trend we're on, they may not be alone for long. Jonathan Klein, president of CNN, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
John Jurgensen, Peter Weibrow says this is a kind of trade-off of time for money. But you're writing about people who don't necessarily interpret it that way. Tina Sharkey, you're pointing to here. It's the time when she sits down with her kids. She reads Harry Potter from 6:45 to 7:31 in the morning. That's time for love, for family. Or is it money? John?
Correct. Well, I think Peter is very much in the right there that that money and the economy and global business is driving this forward. But I think that wouldn't be necessarily so much of a surprise to our readers. So we wanted to really focus on the people who are also embracing this time for personal matters. And I think that does go hand in hand with the business side, because that's what's, you know, forcing them into that position. So, you know, we did find some interesting stories about people using this time in creative ways. I mean, one gentleman that didn't appear in the story, but who I found very interesting was a guy who had discovered his love of writing, and the time when he was most creative was about 4:30 in the morning. So he'd get up at 4:30 or so when the rest of the family was asleep, and this is in Minneapolis, so you can imagine how dark and cold it was, to pound out poetry on his laptop before work. And he really just found it had changed his life. And, you know, not everyone can do that, but I think for some people it's especially rewarding because it is such a private time.
Not the first ink-stained wretch to look to the early morning to try and pound it out. Mike's calling from North Fork, New York. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I agree full-heartedly. I've spent 18 years on midnights working in a foundry, and then I switched to day shift.
Yeah.
And I had a small problem trying to switch over to day shift, but eventually what I have found, I get up around 4 o'clock in the morning.
For work, do you have to, Mike, or is it by choice now?
No, I'm retired now.
Okay.
And I still get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I find that I'm more productive in the early morning hours up until about 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then the body seems to kind of slow down a little bit. I still continue doing things, but at a slower pace. The majority of the work is done in the morning. And usually in the evening, my body says around 8 o'clock or so, it's time to hit the rack. And I just go with the flow and go to bed.
Well, you know, Mike, you remind us, there was a time when lots more Americans got up a lot earlier. Maybe this is the productive hour for some people.
I find
but I think
so.
But
when I worked on a farm when I was a boy,
yeah.
And the clock did not tell us when to get up. It's when the milking had to be done in the morning. We got up before the crack of dawn. We did our chores and did stuff during the day.
Yep.
We had our evening supper, and we took an hour or more to shoot the bull and sit around for a while.
Right.
And then physically, you were told, your body said, okay, it's time to go to bed. Go to bed.
Blow out the kerosene lamp, and off you go. Mike, let us pick that up. Peter Weibrow, I know that kind of life and schedule Mike's describing there. Maybe it's a kind of a 1950s man in a gray flannel suit 9-to-5 thing that was artificial here, or not.
Well, you see, what is happening as your call-ins come, these are very sensible folk. What they've done is they've accommodated to their internal rhythms. And we all have those. Some of us do much better in the morning than others. Some people are evening people. Some people are morning people. So those who, your last caller, for example, what he's discovered is his early morning is his good time, and he enjoys that very much, and there's no reason why he shouldn't get up at that time. But what he's also very smart about is he recognizes his bodily rhythms, and he lets it slow down in the afternoon, and he goes to bed early. The problem with a 24-hour, 7 calendar mm-hmm. is that a lot of people can't make that choice, and then they get into these troubles that... I talk about in American Mania, but the fact is that all of your callers so far have been very smart about the way they handle things.
Right, up early, but hitting the rack early,
exactly.
As well as Mike says.
Exactly. It is the old farming schedule, as you inferred.
John Jurgensen, though, you talked to the National Sleep Foundation, and they told you that 70% of folks are not naturally alert and active in the morning. So is this a minority who would really enjoy this or profit by it?
Well, I think that those are based on surveys. So I think a lot of us have different times in our lives where we, vary. I got a lot of letters actually after the story ran, and mm-hmm. many people pointed out to me that we are also living in an aging population, and that as you age, your circadian rhythms do tend to shift, and so that does play a part of it. I mean, I think our lifestyles and our habits and even our bodies and their expectations change over the years.
So maybe it's just a lot of boomers up early flushing that toilet. And
perhaps.
What a picture. I want to turn to Atlanta, Georgia right now. And Jeff Green, he's founder and president of Green Classic Limousines in Atlanta. He's president of the National Limousine Association. He's had to increase the number of drivers he's got on the road in the early morning and has seen increased calls for pickup at earlier hours, 4:30 in the morning. Jeff Green, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Tom.
Now, what do you think is pushing this? Why do you need more drivers to answer more calls earlier?
Well, I think, as one of your speakers has said earlier, that the global economy, the way business is being done today, has changed dramatically, especially since 9-1-1. And we've seen a tremendous increase in early morning pickups, where we used to maybe do a handful, and the earliest really being around 6 o'clock, and that has really changed from 4:30, and even on occasion 3:30. We used to keep just a couple chauffeurs on the overnight shift to cover these, but that has changed. We've increased that, quadrupled it, actually.
Now, let me ask you, is that because people just need to get to the airport earlier because security takes longer, or are these people going to the office at that hour?
Well, that's a good question, and kind of in preparation, I looked through our archive database to see just what the case might be, and it's kind of a combination of both. We are getting a lot of people deciding to go to the airport a lot earlier than they used to because of the time it takes to get through security.
Right.
And the delays in traffic. And traffic, especially in Atlanta, just keeps getting worse and worse. And where traffic rush hour used to really be 7:30 on, really is starting at 6:30 and a lot of occasions 6. And in the evening, sometimes I wonder if rush hour ever stops.
And, of course, people are living farther and farther from the city center, the exurbs beyond the suburbs, so it's a longer drive.
Yeah, it's a much longer drive, and in a lot of cases, a lot of our business clients have decided when they have flights in the afternoon and they're going into the office, instead of driving to the office and just parking in the deck, they're taking car service, and they're getting up earlier, trying to beat the traffic, and a lot of the trips that we are now doing does appear in a lot of calls that we get, and a lot from what we hear from our clients are that they, in fact, are trying to beat traffic.
Mr. Green, do you have any trouble finding drivers at that hour, or is there plenty of a big pool of people ready to take the wheel?
Well, it kind of depends what day of the week.
Monday morning?
We do have somewhat of a problem getting drivers that late at night, but then you've got some chauffeurs that certainly prefer those kind of hours in work. It's just kind of a hit and miss. But I think nationally, just getting chauffeurs in general has been somewhat of a problem.
Let's take a call from Boston. We've got Emil on the line. Hi, Emil. You're on the air.
Yes, greetings. I just was going to make a quick comment that it's really a 24-hour-a-day economy now, because it's not just where you are or where you have to be, but the people that you have to reach when they're available. I do business with people in Europe, with India, with New Zealand, and so I found myself with 7 a.m. conference calls, 11 p.m. conference calls. And you basically have to have the connectivity. You have to be able to reach out and touch people. We actually use Skype quite a lot.
Internet calling.
Yes. And find that between that and the video capabilities that it has, quite a very nice way to do things.
Emil, is it cutting into your life, or is it just stretching it in a way that you like? Are you up earlier?
I'm up earlier. I stay up later, and I sometimes nap during the day. You just have to make accommodations to be able to be there and or to reach people.
You're lucky to take a nap.
It sounds like you may be asleep in the back of one of Jeff Green's limousines one day soon. Emil, thanks for calling in. John Jurgensen, you're at the Wall Street Journal. Do you hear businessmen saying this all the time? I'm on the phone to India, to New Zealand, to China, you name it, so I've got to be there?
Oh, very much so, and I think that it's just, you know, it's standard operating procedure for a lot of folks in business these days. And of course, that device that more and more people are carrying, the BlackBerry, makes that even more possible. You know, you speak to people who do almost all their business, you know, a good majority of their business when they're away from the office on that, you know, palm-held device, where they're dealing with, you know, a constant stream of incoming business, and business and electronic transmissions don't necessarily respect the clock, and so they'll come in at any time of the day or night.
Peter Weibrow, is it really American mania for more money then, or is it the global economy that's driving it, whether people want to be up doing it or not?
Well, I think they're intertwined. I mean, the marketplace has essentially become the new ideology, and it is driven indeed by the global market and the competition that engenders. But there's no doubt that if we stood back and thought about it, the issue of how you prioritize your life becomes a very personal thing. At the moment, many lives are prioritized by that held hand device. You know, if somebody calls you, they're setting your priorities. You're not setting your own. So I think that it's a whole new way. I mean, we talk about getting in touch with our feelings, but I'm wondering if perhaps we shouldn't start getting in touch with our thinking. Where is all this going? I think that's one of the questions that I try to pose in the book.
Mm. It's going to the crack of dawn. Jeff Green, I know we've got to let you go there in Atlanta. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Tom.
Kevin's calling from Randolph, Massachusetts. Hi, Kevin. What do you know?
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. As I'm sure is the case with most people, I've always had a tendency to sleep 2 or 3 hours later on my days off. And recently I've made sure that I get up 2 to 3 hours earlier than I ever used to, and it has actually changed the quality of my life.
And this is when you have the option of sleeping in, but you're just deciding to be up earlier.
I'm deciding, yeah. And I find myself on Saturday and Sunday throughout the day looking at the clock, and when I realize that I'm basically 3 hours ahead of the game, and it leaves me 3 more hours. Some people might use that 3 hours to do chores and errands, and
yep,
you can do that. But I look at it as 3 more hours to lie back and relax, take my dog for a walk in the woods, bake cookies. It's basically given me, as I say, 2 to 3 hours a day of every day off of time for rest, recreation,
yeah,
whatever I care to do. And I just find myself being thrilled by that throughout the day. Every time I look at a clock on a Saturday night,
you're ahead of the game.
It's 3 in the afternoon, and I realized that in the old days it would be 6 in the evening, and I'd have that much less time.
So it feels like a winner for you, but what about the gang that's doing that every day of the week, Kevin? What do you think?
Well, I most of us do that, don't we? I'm up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
That's not extremely late. I mean, that's par for the course. If people choose to get up earlier than that and they can do so, that's great for them. But there aren't an awful lot of people who get up at 9 o'clock in the morning to get ready for work.
No, certainly not. And we hear you luxuriating in it on the weekend and changing your clock to have that time. Let me get another call here from Boston. Edmund is on the line. Hi, Edmund. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually did a PhD in sleep research up at McGill, and and also did some postdoc in the same field. And I thought one study that we bumped into that was really quite important and became quite an important message for the sleep field to kind of communicate to the public as a whole was that even with just 2 days of 6 hours of sleep compared to the same person with 8 hours of sleep,
okay,
their performance decreased. So two days in a row, 6 hours of sleep instead of 8,
mm-hmm,
their performance markedly decreased. But what was really interesting about it was the person thought they were doing great, better than they had otherwise. And the reason for it is because there's a bit of a antidepressant effect of sleep depriving yourself, because those last 2 hours of sleep are usually very intense dream periods of the sleep phases.
Yeah, but people felt better without them. Why? They're euphoric from sleep deprivation?
So, well, it's a bit of a bizarre. Obviously, you can't take that to too far an extreme. But the point is that what was interesting is that the person was actually perceiving themselves as doing much better than they were, than they were in fact doing.
Right.
And so now that's just kind of one observation. The other observation was that you know once you lose it, you don't really get it truly. So you know this idea that you can have your 6 hours of sleep 5 days of the week and then kind of make it up during the weekend is kind of is a bit of a false sense as well. And so you imagine now the world with this waking up earlier in the morning with the idea that they think they're doing better, but
right.
In fact they're not. And I think it's just kind of an interesting observation. It's probably worth putting out there that 8 hours of sleep really matters, and obviously it's difficult to get more and more, but I think it's just we need to keep reminding ourselves that it makes a difference.
And there's the word straight from the doctoral thesis. People feeling fine, but maybe bumping into walls as they feel that way. Edmund, thank you very much for calling in. I want to turn to one of the early morning crowd who's been using those very, very early hours in a new way. Chris Oberbeck joins us from New York. He's managing director at Saratoga Partners. It's a private equity firm in New York. Up for family time now, just half an hour earlier, but a distinctive jump earlier, very early in the morning. Chris Oberbeck, thanks for being with us. What's got you out of bed so early?
Well, I think you mentioned it. It's family time. I think that's what's more difficult. Even our children, we have four boys, and their schedules are so busy. It's hard for us to get the family dinner together, or family engagements like birthday parties and
right.
things. Are just everyone seems to be going in many directions, and so we find that in the morning for breakfast is really the time that we can sort of all be together.
So we're reading here that you celebrate birthdays now over waffles sometimes instead of cake, that the family breakfast is there instead of the family dinner.
Yeah, that's what we found works for us. I mean, it works more consistently. I mean, we still do the family dinner when we can, but
yeah.
We just find that we can definitely make the family breakfast.
And what about your work piece of this? I think I just heard an email come in behind you there. Is your BlackBerry popping off? What, you live up in Greenwich. Early in the morning, are you out of bed to track the markets? Is work coming at you earlier?
Well, it does come up me earlier, but fortunately I can keep my BlackBerry off if I need to. But as I said, for example, one of the things I've done with my wife, or time with my wife, is we do yoga together
mm-hmm.
twice a week. And we have our yoga instructor come to our house. And, we started something that now is actually, she's got a number of other clients that are doing it at 6:30 in the morning.
So crack of dawn, do you think you're going to keep this up? When your boys, your sons get older, maybe they won't want to be up with you, Pops.
They may not, but the thing is they have to go to school, they have to do all sorts of things afterwards. So, but it's actually kind of compressed. I mean, we have, maybe a birthday might take, 15 or 20 minutes,
Right, it's efficient in the morning because you got to get off to school. Sticking those candles in the waffles. Chris Oberbeck in New York, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Pete's calling from Lebanon, Tennessee. Hi, Pete, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I own a travel center right here in Lebanon, which has a 24-hour restaurant. And we've noticed a trend to the point that we've had to change our shifts of cooks because our breakfast is about an hour earlier now than it was just a few years ago. And we've noticed that these trends have picked up. Plus, our third shift, our late-night dinners,
yeah.
or late-night breakfasts as we serve them, has picked up from people that are working late. So you've got it both ways. We're seeing the ones that are coming late coming home, and the ones that are getting up at 4:30 in the morning and having breakfast with us at 5 and then going straight on into Nashville or wherever they're headed for their daily work.
So you've got crews really working the whole clock now. They're in Lebanon. What's your sense? Are most of these commuters or are these travelers on the long haul at that hour?
No, this is our locals. This is our commuters. Of course, you have your summer crowd that are up and gone on their vacation or on their trips and stuff. But these are actually people that are commuting from Lebanon, Tennessee to the Nashville area or to Smyrna or to Murfreesboro or some of the surrounding communities, and they're just getting up and going in earlier and earlier.
So it feels like, looks like you're seeing that 24/7 life right under you there, Pete.
Oh yes, yes. We've noticed. Like I say, we've had to adjust because we didn't have enough staffing. So we actually had to add on staffing just to accommodate the early morning breakfast and the late night breakfast.
Well, there's the word, the direct witness from Lebanon, Tennessee. Pete, thanks for calling. Peter Weibrow, Pete uses the word adjust here. Maybe we can just adjust. Maybe we just adjust and roll on.
Oh, yes, we can adjust. We can adjust quite a bit. In fact, I think that's what we've been hearing in the hour here. But you can't adjust infinitely. You know, we're pushing the edges of our physiology now. So the most important thing, as the sleep researcher mentioned, is to know what is possible. And if you don't take care of the amount of sleep you need, over a long period of time, you'll actually begin to destroy many of your normal physiological functions. One of the studies, for example, published in The Lancet a few years ago, clearly demonstrated that if you deprive, as was said earlier, an individual, young people, these were between 20 and 30, a couple of hours a week for 6 days, and you feed them the sort of fast food that most of us are now eating, your ability to move carbohydrates out of your blood is impaired by about 40%. Your immune system begins to take a hit. And in fact, what you do over a period of time is you begin to destroy the elements that are so important in adaptation. Now, sensible living, you can accommodate things at both ends of the day, but you have to at some point come to grips with the fact that the body does have its normal rhythms, and if you try to ignore them, you're ignoring millions and millions of years of evolution on this planet, which happens to have a day-night cycle that we have to accommodate. So it's a trade-off, as I said, and the issue then becomes, you're going to trade it off for family, you're going to trade it off for money, you're going to trade it off for quiet time in the woods. That's the sensible approach. But unless you take a sensible approach, you can find yourself on a treadmill going nowhere.
Let's take a call from Port Angeles, Washington. Jim's on the line. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Tom. When I was on active duty in the Navy, they sort of inadvertently taught us to find sleep where we could, because probably we would not be able to sleep when we wanted to. And it was very common to find sailors taking naps from time to time, and I still do this. The point that was just made a moment ago, you can't lose your rhythm, but you can accommodate the fact that you weren't able to keep up with it.
Absolutely.
By these what are now known as power naps, I guess.
Power napping or catnapping it, snatching it where you can. Does that stretch the adaptability for you, did you find, Jim?
Well, yes. Even when driving, if I feel like I'm drowsy, I pull over, let myself go to sleep for only 5 minutes maybe, and I'm refreshed and ready to go for many more miles.
We got it, Jim.
I do the same thing in my office.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And good on anybody who can. And, Jim, thanks for your call. Peter, maybe there are adaptations here that we haven't fully explored yet. Maybe we're going to be, up late, up early, and spotting naps through the day.
Well, napping is definitely becoming, I think, a thing, again, that intelligent people do. You can refresh yourself. In fact, we did some interesting studies when I was at the University of Pennsylvania, Dr. David Dinges, on long-distance airline pilots, that, in fact, if there was a whole rule back in the 80s and 90s that they weren't allowed to nap in the cockpit. Mm-hmm. But, in fact, what David showed was that if they do nap under controlled conditions, their performance and their attention is far, far better than if the nap is not taken on these very long flights of 12 hours and so on. So napping definitely has its place. Again, it's all an issue, and I think this is why your program is so valuable, of thinking about the issue in a rational way and learning about your own health and your own body, prioritizing what you need, and then you can survive the 24/7 demand.
Let's take a call from Marshalltown, Iowa. Bethany's on the line. Hi, Bethany. You're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And let everyone know that my husband and I just moved back to Marshalltown, Iowa. We were living in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and decided to get off the train, so to speak, and that was moving too fast for us.
Mm.
We had an hour commute each way to our jobs in downtown, and we now live in a small town in Iowa, and we have a block to get to work. We walk.
One block, and you walk.
One block. We can do a lot within one block here, and we're just very happy. We don't even use an alarm in the morning anymore.
So you're gearing down instead of gearing up. What does it do to your rising time? Do you now loll about until 5 minutes before work?
No, but we have flexible jobs, so we sleep until about 6:30 every day, but we go to bed at about 10, and we get a full 8 hours of sleep at least a night.
Bethany, what did it cost you to gear back a little bit instead of revving up all the time?
Well, we're living, our cost of living is about 60% of what it was in Minneapolis, so we have a great lifestyle for, and we think a better quality of life slowing down this way, so...
Wow, we're all going to be moving to Marshalltown if you're not careful there, Bethany. Thanks very much for calling. Peter Warbaugh, let me ask you. I hear a little lilt of an English accent there. America's mm-hmm. not the only nation, culture, in a globalized 24/7 economy now. Are Americans responding to the global economy differently from others? Let's say Britain's.
We're ahead of the curve, I think, but... everybody is behind, right behind us. England, particularly, actually, you see the same trends of that we've been discussing. Plus, you know, the growing obesity, which is very much tied to this. Although we haven't had time to talk about it, lack of exercise, increasing fast foods, etc. You see that trend in England, and I think it's going throughout the world. It's also happening in China now, even in India. The problem has become one of the electronic world having created something which is antithetical to the normal human experience, which, of course, has been built over many hundreds of thousands of years. So we're going to have to think it through and adapt to it, because if we keep pushing the edge, especially if we don't do it intelligently, as you've been emphasizing today, we're going to actually push the physiological limits, and you're going to see a very interesting trend, such as we're now seeing in young people who are obese with early diabetes and so on and so forth. So this is a very serious public health issue, and I think we're reminded of it when we come to the springtime clock change, that we have to think about these things carefully as a nation.
But I have to say, I'm hearing people handling this in all kinds of ways, just in our conversation today.
No, it's wonderful. No.
Maybe we're just segmenting. Maybe we're going to, instead of all being on the 9-to-5 conveyor belt and the kind of day clock that goes with that, maybe some portion will become the early morning shift of a society more than ever, in effect, to deal with that globalized economy. Maybe we're not all going to be burning it at both ends.
Well, that's what one would hope. I mean, burning it at both ends, life gets to be very thin and difficult after about the age of 35, when one's body begins to slow down. But I think if we can accommodate this and think about it in exactly what you just said, so that the nation begins to segment and we have people who are working throughout the clock, but we're working in ways that are constructive and compatible with our own sense of self and our own physiology, that's possible, possibly the most sensible way to adapt to this 24-hour, 7-day-a-week economy.
So maybe we'll take all those aging boomers with their evolving circadian rhythms and put them on the morning shift.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the whole interesting question of ageism is very vital here, because there are lots of people who now, with modern healthcare, can, or even just by good taking care of oneself, you can live for a long, long time, and you can do things that perhaps were thought not to be possible at 65.
Well, we may be onto some things here, for good and for ill. Peter Weibrow, it's been great having you. We're so grateful to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. Peter Weibrow's book is American Mania: When More Is Not Enough. Listeners, you can continue the conversation, download the On Point podcast, and subscribe to our daily newsletter any time of the day at our website, onpoint.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.